Welcome to the Alliance of Independent Authors podcast, direct from the 2016 London Book Fair. Want to boost your book sales? Who doesn't? Our panel discussion, Sell More Books in More Formats in More Territories, is led by Ally director Orma Ross, who interviews two best-selling indie authors and sales gurus, Mark Dawson and Joanna Penn, together with Ally's literary agent Toby Mundy, about how to go beyond selling ebooks in your home territory.
Great to see so many of you here. I'm Orna Ross. I'm director of the Alliance of Independent Authors, which is an association for authors who are interested in self-publishing. And I am here with three of the most interesting people in self-publishing at the moment. Our aim in this session is that we are going to pack it full of the information that you need. We're going to be talking about how to sell more books, but not just ebooks in English on Amazon. We're talking about all the different ways in which you can get books out there to your readers. And the panel here today is a really spectacular panel. First up, we'll be hearing from Joanna Penn, who probably needs no introduction to most of you. But Joanna has had a really fantastic career already as an indie author, just building a business from the ground up. Had the dream, 5 years ago? Stuck in a job she hated, now living the dream. And she's going to talk to you about how she did that. On my right here, on the far right, is Toby Mundy from TMA Associates, a new dynamic and very interesting literary agency. He works together with the back office with Ed Victor, which is one of the biggest literary agencies here in the UK. And Toby is working with the Alliance of Independent Authors, taking self-published work out into the trade published world. Because for us, an indie author, there's no such thing as a hybrid, really. For us, an indie author will always do whatever is best for their book at a particular point in time, depending on what the options are. So this sort of idea, will I self-publish? Will I trade publish? For lots of people, that's not even a choice. And when it is a choice, there are lots of different ways you can handle it. So Toby will be talking a bit about that. And then here we have another superstar indie author, Mark Dawson, who has, I think, Mark, you have actually said it was all dead, flatlining kind of sales figures until he discovered Facebook advertising. And Mark has used that to turn his whole writing career around. He's going to be talking to you a little bit about that and all the other ways that he sells books. So, Joanna, how did you do it? How do you sell books in more formats, okay, in more territories?
Oh. Is this, can you hear me? Is this okay? Yeah, okay. So who was here yesterday? Because I recognise a few faces. Yeah, so I've done my spiel in your back. I have to do something a bit different. But yes, basically I wrote my first book sort of 2006, 2007. First self-published in 2008. So it's been a while. Back in 2008, there was no Kindle, no Kobo. CreateSpace was just starting. It was a very different world. And I made a ton of mistakes back then. Some of you heard about it yesterday. But basically, you know, I printed loads of books. I had them in the garage. I tried to sell them, but I didn't know anything about marketing. So I made some really big mistakes. So these are actually some initial mistakes I would say a lot of indies make, knowing nothing about what you should actually do to create a good product. And that's something that we all learn over time. So basically then I got into self-publishing. I made the decision because of the speed at which traditional publishing moves. I'm sure Toby can speak to that later. But basically I figured that as a businesswoman, I could make a living with my writing if I actually took it, you know, into my own hands. So I first started self-publishing ebooks, but then I moved into print books and audiobooks. So we're talking about more formats, more countries. So of course, many people starting out will just do an ebook in English and will maybe sell in the UK and the US, which is fantastic. But as indies, we can now sell in 160 countries, I think it is, and I've sold in 74. So, and that's mainly in English. So if you just have books in English, fantastic, because it's the most international language. So then basically you can reach those countries by publishing on different platforms. So Kobo, iBooks, Drafter Digital, who are over there, and also then different formats. So you can do ebooks, you can do print books through print on demand, through companies like CreateSpace and Ingram Spark, who are here at the fair. We can also now do audiobooks with companies like ACX. Anyone done their audiobooks? Okay, this is the thing. It's an emerging market, and the growth in audio is huge. So these are some of the opportunities we have as indie authors. So that's another format. And then, of course, as we move into the future of, and if anyone listens to my podcast, virtual reality and gaming and all kinds of things, if you own your rights, or you have an agent who will help you sell them, you can get your intellectual property into all these different places. So it's a super exciting time to be an author.
So that's kind of how we get them into the formats, how we reach out to the territories. But how do you sell more books into those places? What would your kind of top tips for the authors who are listening here, who are on audio, who are available, who are already out there and, you know, available, but maybe not selling?
Okay, so the how do I sell more books question, I know Mark will talk about some advertising options, but the basics have to be right. So one of the big things is writing in a series. So this is like a really big deal. Writing in a series means that you have time to build up an audience. It means that people who buy one book will likely buy more than one book, and that's important. Selling more books to the same customer is super important. Writing in genres that people actually buy. This is a fundamental issue for many authors, is they write a book and then think about where the hell am I going to sell it? Whereas if you actually have a look at the book, the digital bookstores, as to which categories and subcategories there are, you will be able to find a slot for your books. And this is super important. So one of the big questions is, what are the authors and what are the other books that are similar to yours? And have a look at those categories. And that's going to help you when you're advertising. But you need that fundamental stuff. And of course, if you have a traditional publisher, that's what their job is. But as an indie author, that is your job. The other big thing I'll say before I pass the mic on is pricing. One of the massive advantages that indies have is pricing over traditional publishing. You guys have seen the price of ebooks, right, from traditional publishers? They're getting higher and higher all the time. Whereas what indies can do is actually undercut those prices. And that's why I've sold books in 74 countries, is because people in Nigeria, which is a, you know, a hugely economically booming country, can actually afford to buy my books, for example. Oh, there's a Nigerian at the back. Fantastic. So this is the thing. We can actually price to people in different currencies that will, you know, India, for example, pricing in rupees, a huge English-speaking market of middle-class, educated Indians who buy books. This is what we can do as indie authors. So very exciting time. We can also use free. A permanently free first book in a series is something that traditional publishers still struggle with. So we can do stuff like that. So there you go, pricing.
Fantastic. Toby. Right. So Toby is working with the Alliance of Independent Authors. We actually have a guide to some of our writers' work here at London Book Fair, which is being presented to rights buyers all over the world who have come here to London to talk to people like Toby. And so can you talk to us a little bit, Toby, about what you can do for self-published authors, and also what you're seeing in the trade published world and perhaps how that is changing?
So I've been on a real journey for the last 12 months with my teacher sitting at the end there. I knew I started my agency a couple of years ago, and before that I'd spent 25 years as a commissioning editor and then running a publishing company, a trade publishing company. But I knew that what was going on in the self-publishing space, the independent authorship space, what I increasingly think of as the micro-publishing space, was where lots of innovation and talent was collecting, and that the means of production, the way of getting your book made and distributed, were becoming very, very cheap indeed. So any of us in this room who had a manuscript could now, for next to nothing, get it out into the world, as Joe says, into 74 or 124, God knows how many countries, and find readers and start finding readers. And the big corporations are good at many things, but they do have some quite large dirty secrets. And one of their dirty secrets is that despite being in the era of big data, they're not very good at finding audiences for books. They have brilliant, hardworking people, and lots of the most exciting books in the world travel through those buildings at some point. But they're not actually very good at taking a novel, maybe a romance or a thriller, and building a readership for it. In fact, they're terrible at it. And there are structural reasons for that. And I don't want to go down a big rabbit hole, but essentially in the trade publishing business, it's a conveyor belt. And it's awful to think about it that way, but it is a conveyor belt. So lots of people in a publishing house sit in a line and the book passes down the conveyor belt and they work on it as it goes past them. But they have to keep their eyes fixed forward, because if they follow the book up the conveyor belt, then all the stuff behind them piles up. In this space, in the independent authorship space, there is no conveyor belt. You can wake up in the morning and say to yourself, well, what can I do for my book every day? How can I find another reader? What can I try? What new stuff can I try out? What can I improve? What can I look at and learn? So because you're both the publisher and the author, you have this capacity to beat the conveyor belt. You also get paid monthly, which is what you don't get in the big corporations. You get paid 6 monthly. So there's a whole, increasingly, the ecosystem that supports readers and writers and books and publishing and book distribution is more variegated, more diverse than I've known in nearly 30 years. And I knew that as an agent, I wanted to understand this and to try and play a part in it for selfish reasons, because I thought there was money to be made, but also because I thought it was exciting. I thought what was happening around here was where new talent and new ideas, new kinds of book entrepreneurship were going to emerge. And so far, that I think is proving to be the case. So the other dirty secret of the big corporations, I think, is that they are more and more brand management systems. That is to say, they can take brands, writers, people with followings and with fans and do good work for them. But what they can't really do is take someone who's not a brand and build an audience for them. They can do it sometimes, but not very often. So they can take Zoella off YouTube and stick 750,000 copies into people's houses. They can take 350,000 copies of Jamie Oliver and put those into the book trade. They can take Dawn French and turn her from being an actor and a comedian into a novelist. All those things are quite hard to do. But what they can't do is take a new writer, a new crime writer, and very easily turn that writer into the next big thing. And indeed, their patience for doing that is less than it's ever been. One of my previous lives, I worked at Orion, and I remember vividly sitting in a room where people were discussing whether Ian Rankin had a future, because after his 6th or 7th book, he wasn't really working. Now, that to me seems incredible, and I can't quite believe it would happen in the same way these days. So I knew I wanted to be part of this space and to participate and see if I could help, and see if I could help everyone make some money, including myself. And it seemed to me that, as Orna says, for lots of writers, it's not a choice. This is your path to a readership, and every reader counts, and you start off knowing them all by name, and then you start to sell your books to strangers, and from there, things happen. But this is a rights fair. This place we're sitting at here is partly to do with sales and distribution, so there are booksellers, and there are wholesalers, and there are others here, but it's also a rights fair. And I'm incarcerated in the International Rights Center up there with hundreds of literary agents. I'm not sure what the collective noun for agents is. Maybe it's a grasp.
A coven of agents.
A coven of agents. a grasp of agents. We're sitting up there, and we're really participating in what is a rights fair. So you own the copyright to your work, but that copyright can be expressed in lots of different ways. In most obviously, it has volume rights, which are your book and your ebook rights. But there's also serialization rights and extract rights, where you sell a piece of your work. There's also merchandising rights, where somebody in some fabulous future might pay you to put your work on T-shirts or in other things. But the two other rights that might be interesting today, one is which is film, and one of which is translation. Now, I want to say something about film rights, because I do work with Ali about film rights, which is that selling film rights is really hard. It's really hard. It's a really long road. If someone takes a film option, the chances of that film getting made are vanishingly small. And then the chances of that film getting made and being any good are even smaller. And an old boss of mine used to say, you know, that movie does not exist until you see George Clooney walking down a red carpet. And that's really true. So although everyone thinks, God, it'll be great, my book will make a great movie, a great movie, a great movie, the thing that would maximize the chances of your book making a great movie is you selling 250,000 copies of it in book form. That would really help. Because everybody is looking for proof of concept, and there is no more expensive cultural artifact than making a movie. That is to say, they're really expensive to make. So if, you've got to raise money, you've got to have, I mean, you understand how it all works. So no matter how brilliant your book is, and no matter how much you and your friends and readers tell you it would make a great movie, and I'm sure they're right, the most likely way that that would happen would be for your books to be roaring successes. Because it's only when you deliver the proof of concept that comes from having a couple of 100,000 readers, could I even get people to pick the thing up?
So before we go on to Mark, could we talk then about translation? Because I think that's probably the most, I think we've kind of worked out the film. We won't wait for the film deal.
Yeah, so part of my job is the expectations management business. Now, what's very interesting is in translation. So part of what's going on around here is that publishers from non-Anglophone countries are talking to each other and to Anglos about licensing the rights to produce an edition of the work in Swedish, French, German, whatever. And that's the that's a translation right, and it's probably one of the hardest rights for an independent author to exploit. Although people like Joe are pioneering joint ventures with translators that allow those things to be created, and it's extraordinary and exciting. Now, there is no doubt that publishers overseas are really interested in what's going on in this space, particularly in the Anglosphere space, because there's so much more flexibility around pricing in the English language ebook market. It's possible to have much bigger successes, whereas, for example, in Germany, it's a much less developed space, and that's partly because of the absence of flexibility around pricing, I would say. So there is huge interest in translation rights. It is hard to sell translation rights. There is an old rule in trade publishing, which is that you shouldn't really buy the translation rights to a book unless that book has been a pretty, pretty big success in its country of origin. Because if it hasn't worked in your country of origin, then there's not much you can do to make it work in your country. And that's sort of true in translation as well. But nonetheless, once a self-published book has maybe sold 50,000 copies, which is an awful lot of copies, and by sold, I mean sold. I know free is in part of the model, but once you've sold a lot of volume, it is possible now to get non-Anglophone publishers to look at it, to take it seriously, and I've been here having 18 meetings a day for the last two days and early before that, and there's no doubt that there is interest in it. But it's a long road. I see my role in this space as, at the moment, just getting names and getting circulating certain writers and getting them known, and I see the road to securing translation deals for them to be probably a 2 or 3 stage process. It's a long road. The future lasts a long time, and building a publishing career takes time. So my other suggestion in passing is about patience as well.
Thank you, Toby. Just before we leave, could I ask Joanna, just before we leave translation, as somebody who has translated your own work and you know, try to market it abroad, can you talk to us a little bit about that experience and how it would compare to, say, giving your rights to Toby and asking him to go upstairs and sell it for you?
Sure. So I have now my books in 5 languages, and I've done, as Toby mentioned, some joint ventures with translators. And this is now possible, again, if you own your rights, you can do this type of relationship. And there are translators who are happy to do this for either a fee or a percentage of royalties, which is how I've done it, in the same way that I've done it with audiobook narrators. I've also done, deals on that through ACX, which is all possible. However, what I will say is Toby is my agent because foreign rights are all very well. So yes, hey, I have some books in German and Italian and French and something else. But it's very hard to do marketing in those countries, in those languages, unless you have a partner. So actually, my biggest foreign language success so far has been in French, because the French translator also has a platform. He has a podcast, he has a blog, he has a website. He's actively promoting the book, as well as Kobo, for example, is a French has a French kind of side. So doing promotions through that too. So if you are going to do translations, I would say that you really have to be able to market in that language, or have the translator or someone else do it for you. So there's a great indie author here, Tina Folsom, she's around somewhere, who speaks German. So if you are bilingual, for example, you can proofread your own translated book, but you can market, but it's very, very rare unless you have those skills. So I would say the reason I wanted to work with an agent is because it's very hard to do this yourself. yourself. It's not impossible, and some authors are doing it, but it is difficult.
And if you are hiring a translator, do ask for one who can handle marketing as well. So make sure that they have the ability, at a minimum, to do social media on your behalf in that language. Okay, Mark.
Hello.
Over to Mark. Mark is going to talk about how to make your book sales lines go up and up.
So Facebook, yeah?
Yeah, well, okay. Anyway, but start with Facebook, yeah, please.
Okay, so I'm kind of, I suppose I'm best known as the Facebook advertising guy, and it's a massive, massive subject that I'll only be able to touch on very briefly today. Can you hear me? Okay, so I'll only touch on this briefly today because it's a big subject, but there's a website at selfpublishingformula.com where you can subscribe to a podcast and some free videos and stuff like that where you can get more detail, but Facebook advertising is it's a very powerful platform. I discovered it a couple of years ago, and I started originally to advertise for subscribers to my mailing list. So I would spend $5 or $10 a day, and I'd be getting subscribers coming in from all around the world, so the States, the UK, and other places too. And you know, maybe we'll touch on the mailing list later, but that's a pretty good way to build a platform to start selling more significant copies of books. But so there are two ways you can utilize ads. You can use them to build your list, or you can use them to actually directly sell books. And I started selling books about 3 months after I got in with Facebook, and it's been a real game changer for me. And the thing with Facebook is, I mean, everyone knows this, and it's the kind of thing that people are nervous about sometimes, is that Facebook knows absolutely everything about us. Mark Zuckerberg has created a machine that collects lots and lots of data. But he has monetized his platform by making that data available to advertisers, including publishers like us. So one of the authors that my books are very politely compared to would be someone like Lee Child, so Jack Reacher. My character, John Milton, is similar to Reacher, so I'm reasonably confident that if I can advertise to fans of Jack Reacher, they'll probably like my John Milton books. So I can start sending ads to readers who Facebook thinks like Lee Child or Jack Reacher or James Patterson or David Baldacci. And because I know that information, I can start to craft the copy so that I can start to elicit a series of yeses. So I might start my copy with, "Do you like Jack Reacher?" Now, I know the answer to that is probably yes, because Facebook is serving those ads to those people. Then we could say, you know, "Do you like Jack Reacher? Are you interested in an exciting new thriller? Would you like to get that thriller for free, for example, if I'm building my mailing list?" And you can continue to kind of craft copy and images like that, and they can convert at really high rates. So some of the ads that I've been running, and students of mine who've been doing ads too, have been getting returns on investment of 100 or 200%. So in other words, invest one, get two, or get three, or get four back. And that once I discovered that, it was just a massive accelerant to my career, and I've sold, you know, or had downloaded over 2 million books now, and, you know, I've had the last 18 months have been ridiculous. So there's that, and also another thing, we were talking about selling copies in different jurisdictions. You can serve your ads to distinct areas of the world. So I tend to focus on the UK and the US. I sell most of my books through Amazon, but Kobo is just over there, and Kobo is obviously very big in Canada, bigger than Amazon in Canada. And Kobo also allows you to bundle books together and sell them for higher prices and still get 70% as a royalty. So that's a tip that Joe gave me that I'm very grateful for. So but by knowing that, my royalty per sale is about $20 in Canada on Kobo. So I can start to direct traffic from Facebook to Canadian readers who like Jack Reacher or who like Lee Child and are prepared to take a gamble on, well, they can basically get the whole 8 books in the series for $25. And because I'm getting a higher royalty, I don't need to convert quite as many of those clicks into sales. So, you know, I can probably convert about 5% of the people who click on the ad will actually buy the book, and that can return a return on investment to me of maybe 150%. So I've been doing that for the last couple of months, and that's been really fabulous.
Fantastic. I can say that also works for premium products. Last year I did a hardback, very kind of special, but special to me and special to Yeats fans, W.B. Yeats, the Irish poet, hardback, very expensive, kind of £40. You can do on Facebook a reduction on that and still make a very, you know, nice sort of return on each book for very little cost and click over. So before we take it out, I'm sure you have loads of questions. You're already getting loads of tips. We can't leave it without talking about email lists. So Mark first, and then hear from Joe also.
Okay, so the when people ask me, new writers ask me, what should I do right away? The first thing I say, apart from, you know, obvious things like be professional, get a good cover, edit properly so that your book is exemplary, is immediately set up your email list. So I love Amazon, I love Kobo, I love all the other platforms that I sell books on, but they're not going to give me the email addresses of the people who've bought my books. That's proprietary information for those platforms. It's also would be against data protection laws to give that to me. But I want to know who the people are who are buying my books, because if Kobo decided to reduce the royalty, I'd like to direct my readers on Kobo to somewhere else so I can continue to sell them books. So you need to start focusing on that really early. It's not expensive. You can use a service like MailChimp or Aweber. It's free up to the first few thousand subscribers. And once you have that platform, then you can start to sell them your next book. So I find something that's very effective is to give away something. It's gone are the days where you could say, if you sign up to my mailing list, I'll give you some news, or I'll tell you about my writing process. Everyone's doing that, and it's not effective anymore. But what you can do is you could give away a novel. I think that's very effective. If you've only got one novel, you could write a novella. You could do think about DVD extras. You can do take your phone out and record a little interview with yourself talking about the process. That can work quite well. Get them onto your mailing list, and then when you've got a second and third book to sell, that's when you can launch more effectively. You'll be able to sell more early on, which means that you'll rank higher on Amazon's algorithm, which means that you'll get more visibility, which means that you'll get more sales, which means that you'll get more reviews. It's a virtuous circle at that stage, but it all starts with building your mailing list.
And Joe, would you talk about pre-orders in that as well?
Oh, pre-orders.
As well, yeah.
Okay, just quickly on the mailing list, I know some of you write two genres, non-fiction and fiction, right? I know you met some of you yesterday. And what Mark's saying as a fiction author, thriller author, is exactly the same with non-fiction. Actually, it's much easier with non-fiction because you can offer people something that's useful rather than just, hey, another novel for the big-to-be-read list. So if you're writing non-fiction, think about what people want and then give them something for free that they would like, and they will be happy to give you their email. So that would be one tip. Then pre-orders are something that's only really become available to indie authors in the last 18 months, really. And it was something we always wanted because traditionally published authors have pre-orders. And it's very, very good, particularly on iBooks and Kobo. iBooks, for example, double counts your sales. They count your sales when they're sold as pre-orders. You don't get paid twice, but in the rankings, you get pre-order ranking, and then you get all those sales count on launch day, when you also get another spike. So that's a really big deal on iBooks. So for example, if any of you want to hit the New York Times or USA Today list, anyone want to do that? Yeah, okay, so when I did that with a group of authors, that was one of our strategies, because you have to sell on more than one store. So you can't just sell on Amazon. You can't sell 200,000 copies on Amazon on one day and make the list. You actually have to have books on multiple stores. So pre-orders are a really important strategy for indie authors in building up those sales. But of course, you can generally only get pre-orders from people who you already know, and that's why the email list is so important. So, there are lots of tips there, but we'll leave it there.
And I think what's really emerging, and you know, if there's one thing that I would like to get across to you, it is very much about making your book available in lots of different formats and available on lots of different platforms and having a strategy for each. So, for example, on Apple iBooks and Kobo, you can charge a lot more for your ebook, generally speaking, than on Amazon. In certain countries, you can charge more because they're used to spending more on books. And doing that sort of research is important. But also, it's really important that your reader is able to buy the book in whatever format they want to buy it in. So you might think print is old hat and you only want to do ebooks, or you might love print and think ebooks are the worst thing that was ever invented. It doesn't matter about you. You're in service to your reader, so you should make your book available in as many formats as you can afford to make it available in at a particular time. Anything else before we put it out to... Okay, we're ready to take questions. The gentleman in the pink shirt.
This primarily directed towards Mark. I was here a year ago, and I listened to you, and I bought one of your books, The Cleaner, which I much enjoyed. But it's mainly a question about websites, because I've written three books, and I have 30,000 followers on Twitter, and I'm getting free downloads at the rate of about 50 a month. But my website really doesn't do justice, and I'm picking up only a small fraction of those to add to my mailing list. So my question is, number one, when you put your mailing list together, did you use a PR firm or yourself or an advertising agency or who? So that's the first question. And the other question is there a How to Do It book about advertising on Facebook?
Okay, so first answer, I did it myself. I had a friend who's a web designer, so we did it together. But you can get plenty of, in places like Squarespace is pretty good now. WordPress blogs are quite easy to put up. I mean, Joe has got lots of advice. If you go to Joe's website, thecreativepen.com, it's a great place for resources on building things like that. The second question was, Facebook. No, Facebook advertising for authors is going to sound terribly self-aggrandizing, so apologies, but it's quite cutting edge. Not many authors are doing it yet, and I'm probably one of the... there aren't many.
Let me say it. He's very modest. If you want to succeed in Facebook and working with Facebook ads, do Facebook ads for authors course. It is really the only way. I think that Facebook's very easy to misunderstand, and it's very easy to spend an awful lot of money doing it wrong. It's much better to spend some money buying the course and then do it right.
Basically, go to the selfpublishingformula.com. That's my kind of Facebook ads HQ. There's a free course. Now, of course, you have to sign up. See, it's all about mailing lists. So you sign up to the mailing list and you get three free videos that will teach you the rudiments of Facebook advertising. With full disclosure, as Ornette says, there is a paid course at the end of that, but you don't have to take it.
Okay. Helena.
Hello, I'm Helena Halmer. Can you hear me? You can, yeah. I wanted to ask about podcasts. I mean, to me, a podcast, I've just written a novella just so that I can give it away with my newsletter. So, and it's the best book I've written, but there we go. So I was thinking about actually doing it myself, so doing podcast on that novella. Is that something that you think would be a good idea for newsletter?
We have to give that question to Joanna, who is actually going to do a whole session. We're having an Indie Author Fringe online conference free on Friday. If you want to take a look at that, just Google Indie Author Fringe Conference. And Joanna is doing a whole session on audio as marketing.
Yeah, so podcasting is hardcore work, is the first thing. Podcasting fiction is very difficult, and very few podcasts of fiction do very well. Audiobooks for fiction are more interesting. So look at podiobooks.com, podiobooks.com. There's lots of free fiction podcasts, in inverted commas, as in downloadable, serialized audio on podiobooks.com. I wouldn't start a podcast with a novella. That just wouldn't. And if you're interested in podcasting, it's extremely good for a non-fiction platform. I think it's very difficult for a fiction platform, and I would say you'd be better off writing another book, basically.
Okay, next question. I'll come to you next. No, sorry, Jessica, and then this man here.
Again, about the podcasts, I know you've written quite a few non-fiction titles about publishing and marketing, and I know you do podcasts from your website about publishing as well. Do you podcast exactly the same content that's in your books, or do you change it up?
The question, for those of you who might not have heard Jesse's gentle voice, is, no, don't worry, is does Joanna actually give extra in her podcast?
Yeah, so a podcast is different from a book. So for my books, I have actually recorded in a professional studio my Business for Authors book. So no, the podcast is completely different to any books. And I would suggest that a podcast is more of a, you know, a regular content that adds something to your platform as opposed to a way to sell books. It does sell audiobooks if you do narrate your own. Obviously, if people like listening to your voice, they're more likely to buy your audiobook. Go to indieauthorfringe.com and there'll be a whole hour of me talking about audiobooks and podcasts.
And 23 other hours of other great content from other great people, including Mark. Okay.
Hi, it's a question for Mark. I love the idea about giving something of value away, a free book, and I'm moving down this route. I've got a novella that's on KDP and CreateSpace Amazon, and it's done reasonably okay, but I think this could be a great calling card for my next book. Thing is, this is perhaps my lack, it's a technical question really. I was under the impression if you were then to give away this book, KDP and Amazon are going to sort of get the hump in a sense. So how do I do that? Do I have to stop then, just take it off those platforms and then just give it away literally for another platform? Is that how it works?
Yes, and the short answer is yes. A free book is a free book and needs to be free, either free everywhere or just free on your website or wherever you're giving it. This lady here.
Actually, that sort of takes me to the idea of getting perma-free, right? So, because I've always just done KDP Select, but I want to sort of go wide now. But if you put it free on all the other platforms, it just seems to take forever for Amazon to price match that. Can you give me some pointers?
Yeah, you can't set the price to free on Amazon, but you can on the other platforms. The best way to do it is if you go into your KDP dashboard, there's a and then into the help section, there's a section on pricing and rights, I think, off the top of my head. And you can contact Amazon. There's basically an email address. If you tell them with links to the places where it's free, it'll usually be price matched within a few hours.
It needs to be free on the big stores, so Kobo, iBooks, Nook. If you do those three, they're going to price match.
Up at the back here.
My question's for Mark. I just wanted to know if you had any access to the to any data on the percentage of people who specify which books they're fans of on their Facebook profile, and whether there are certain genres that are more likely to do this, or fans of certain genres that are more likely to do this?
Is there data about
genre? So what genres do best?
Is there data about what genre people read or what books people read on Facebook? Is there data about that?
Almost certainly, but I don't know what that is. I mean, I can only speak from my own experience. I write thrillers that they convert well. Romance, erotica does very well. Sci-fi fantasy does pretty well. You know, Facebook is a billion people on Facebook. If you're writing in small niches or niches, as the Americans say, then you can almost certainly find people who'd be interested in it.
Okay, this lady here. Yes, yourself.
Thank you. It's not a question, it's just a thought in response to the last question. I've recently explored BookBub, which I understand is difficult to list on. But what BookBub does is tell you how many of their subscribers like different genres of fiction. So as they've got loads, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of subscribers, it does give you a clue as to the relative popularity of the different genres.
Very, very nice. For those of you who might not have heard, the recommendation is BookBub actually gives a good indication of how many people like each genre proportionately, and BookBub is a good advertising agent for all authors really. And BookBub, of course, built its list with Facebook ads. Yeah. Okay. Question again, this gentleman here.
This is a question for all of you. Well, mainly Mark and Joe. You both have agents, and you both have agents, and you say you use them for translation rights and for movie deals and things. But how do you approach an agent if your main goal isn't to get a traditional publishing deal?
Maybe we'd let Toby take that one. Yeah.
Okay.
How do you approach an agent if your main goal is not to get a traditional publishing deal? Carefully, I think, is probably the answer. It's a division that this, I mean, the second Marxist idea after the means of production is the division of labor. So this is about the division of labor. So even though we have two of the most industrious people I've ever come across, three of them, in fact, to my left, they haven't yet succeeded in cloning themselves. And so there are certain things that they need an extra pair of hands to do. How to approach your agent? Well, you need, in the way that you would approach an agent in any circumstances, which is that you have to tell a story about yourself or your work, and you have to inspire enthusiasm in that representative for one of, at least, ideally both of those things, you and the work. And you need to be aligned in your long-term ambitions. And I would be surprised if very many people in this room are ideologically committed to independent publishing. What they want, in my experience, what all authors want is as many readers as possible and to be paid for the work that they do, a fair market rate, if you like. And that there are many, there are increasing ways that those two things can be achieved.
And they are best achieved with an independent mindset, I will say that it is very important, particularly today more than ever, that you approach your career with an independent mindset. So it's very much about you as the creative director of your work, decide, and of your career, deciding what you want. So the first thing you would do is work out what you do want going forward. And can an agent actually help you? There may not be a role for an agent in your career, or there might be.
Just to answer that, the other thing is to be a successful indie. Because if you're a successful indie, you know, for example, if you hit the top 10 on Amazon.co.uk or the top 100 on Amazon.com, people will contact you. And there are ways to do that over time and build an audience and build an email list. And, you know, as Toby said, this is about patience. If you want to be a writer for the rest of your life and build a career this way, you don't have to do it next month or next year. This is a long-term plan. I'm planning on doing this for the next 50 years. So it will, you know, if you focus on this and implement the best practices of the publishing industry and of indies, these things will happen over time.
Two more questions and then we're all out. No, somebody else who hasn't asked a question. This man down the back, yeah.
This is all fantastic on the marketing side. Where do you get the time to write the bloody things?
This panel is called Sell More Books in More Formats in More Territories. You'll have to go to a writing panel for that one. Anybody else down the back? Any more questions? Oh, yes, this gentleman here.
The importance of your own blog.
Okay. The question is, how important is it to have your own blog? We'll get both of you on that one.
I'd say for fiction, not very. I think it's time intensive for a low return. I'd much rather be spending that time writing the next book, most important, or advertising or building my list. Joe may have a different answer on non-fiction.
Yeah, I agree with Mark. For fiction, I don't think blogging is worth it at all. I think you should write another book, of which you make time by not blogging. For non-fiction, I've built a very successful business off the back of a blog. My business is driven by the creativepen.com, my non-fiction business. So if you're writing non-fiction, I think blogging is still brilliant, and that can be / podcasting as well. But yeah, building your own platform is super, but with fiction, you do it by writing more books. With non-fiction, you can do it through blogging.
Okay, a very final question from somebody who hasn't asked a question, and it's got to be a good one because it's our last one. Okay.
It's just, you know, on the blogging, it's a quick one.
Yep.
How do you build up your followers on blogging?
We talk to you about that afterwards because there isn't time. That's a long, unless you've got a quick answer. Nobody has a quick answer to that one, I'm afraid. Okay, we are out of time. I'd just like to thank our panel, Toby Mundy from TMA, Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, Mark Dawson from selfpublishingformula.com. And yes, if you'd like, as I said, more information, more education, we have the free online conference on Friday, indieauthorfringe.com, and you can register for free and we'll see you again there maybe. Okay, thank you very much.